Hello, friends. Welcome to Josiah Venture Stories. You will hear incredible stories of life change from the mission field and be inspired by the movement of God in Central and Eastern Europe. I'm your host, Gwen Gardner, and I am so excited to share today's conversation with you. Today on the show is Vice President of Finance and Operations, Paul Williams. So shortly after the fall of communism in Central and Eastern Europe, Paul and his wife Molly and their new baby moved to Prague, Czech Republic, for a two-year work assignment. The year was 1996, and it was during that time that they fell in love with the Czech Republic and its people. In 2009, while attending a home gathering, Paul and Molly were introduced to the ministry of Josiah Venture and were overjoyed to know that God was working in a place that they had grown to love so much. In the summer of 2019, Paul and Molly helped lead a team from their home church in Texas to serve at a Josiah Venture English camp in Poland. Through that time, God began to capture their hearts with the vision of Josiah Venture. Soon thereafter, they believed God was leading them to join the Friedland offices in Czech Republic, where Paul serves as the VP of Finance and Operations. In this capacity, he works alongside the president and other members of the executive team to provide leadership, support, and strategic thinking in the operations of Josiah Venture. Their youngest daughter, May, lives with them and attends a local high school. And they also have three additional young adult children, Tate, Claire, and Grant, who all live in Texas. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Great to have time with you, Gwen.
Yay! I love it. I love any time I get to talk with you, Paul. And so I'm delighted to have you on the podcast today.
Well, super excited to be part of it. I enjoy listening to the podcast. It's fun to be one.
So. Oh, it's good to have a longtime listener on the show.
Yeah, a longtime listener, first time caller. That's the thing they say in radio. So a longtime listener, first time podcaster.
That's right. That's right. Well, is this your first podcast you've ever been on?
I think it must be. It must be. Why not?
Yeah. Why not? Yeah, we're just going to say it is. It all started here, your podcast, your podcast future. No. But here, just at the beginning, I did just, give you a really great intro. But what else should the people know about you from a personal perspective? What are some of your hobbies, things you like to do in your free time?
So we're going to say the super exciting finance things for later is what you're telling me.
That's right. That's right. All the finance stuff later.
Thank you for the nice intro too. Let's see, free time hobbies. I like to enjoy a few different things. Some are active things and some are, say, things you have to be still for. Mm-hmm. So I would say the things I like to be still for is I like burning things, like the burning pieces of wood.
Oh, you're a pyro.
Yeah. So I like to, if I have free time and I'm at home, I probably have a fire in the fire pit in the backyard.
So, nice. I love a good fire pit.
Oh, it's just great. So it's morning, noon, night. It doesn't matter. There's a fire in the fire pit if I'm home. Mm-hmm. So that's a place to slow down. It kind of just does something for my soul. I just love that time. And another slow hour activity that I really love that fills me up is to paint and kind of dig into some non-financial creative outlets. So that's a fun
good
thing for me.
Yes.
And I know you like to paint too, Gwen. So
yes.
In fact, when I remember coming to fall conference as a visitor and you had a painting workshop that I attended. It was so fun. So,
that's what I was going to mention. I think that's where we met, right?
I think we did. Yes. Yeah, I think it was there. Yeah.
And I remember thinking, wow, this finance guy has some really creative talents. And also would like create or draw your own postcards, right? And like send them to your children.
Oh, that's true. That's right. Yeah, I did that for a long time with mostly my daughter, Claire, because she's the one that kind of got me back into painting maybe 10, 12 years ago.
Okay.
And she was an artist is an artist. And so I started doing these little postcards and sending when she was at college and sending her like a weekly little postcard that I would paint or sketch. Some were funny, some were silly, some were, I don't know, probably not very great, but they were just what they were. And I'd send a little word from dad. So that was a fun, it kept my creative juices flowing and it got words to kids. So
yeah.
She's the recipient of a lot of those, a big stack of those. So.
Good. Is Claire your most artistically inclined child?
I'd say in that sense, yeah. In the painting side, the drawing side, yeah. Mm-hmm. She's very much on that side. Probably, yeah, of the four kids, she's that child.
Yeah. So, yeah. I would love for you to share more about your family, because also you and your wife and your youngest moved to the Czech Republic. So you left three older children behind in the States. And so what are they doing now? What's their life about?
Yes. Yeah, so their lives are about, they're a young adulting, I guess.
They're young adulting. Yeah.
Young adulting. So they're in their their low to high 20s in those age ranges. Mm-hmm. The oldest one is married. And so I have a great daughter-in-law. They've been married about 3 years. They live in Houston. My daughter, Claire, that I mentioned, she's been out of school for a couple of years and working for a church ministry and women's ministry right now. And my younger son, Grant, just graduated and just got engaged.
Oh, so fun.
So there's a wedding coming up later this year for him.
And wow.
So we'll have two daughters-in-law. Pretty
nice.
Soon.
Expanding family.
Yeah. And so, then May is here, of course, and May is in her, in high school, spent a lot of time learning Czech after she got here.
Yeah.
And is pretty good, as best I can tell, and at Czech language, and is doing great in local Czech schools. So that's really great. And then Molly, I can't forget to say about my wife.
Yes. Your wonderful wife.
31 years.
Wow.
Yes, my best friend, just love serving with her, loving being with her, and love to see how God is using her in really unique ways as we live here. So, yeah,
that's
a bit of our family, yeah.
The growing Williams family. This is just
it's
fantastic.
Expanding, not with more babies, but just...
the grandchildren one day, you know.
One day. We hope for that, yeah.
That's awesome. Now, have they all been, I assume, to come visit you? Have they all been to Czech Republic to visit?
Super cool highlight was, yes, they have. The super cool highlight of 2024 or 2023 was that all of them came at Christmas. Every one of them.
Oh, fun.
And the engagement we talked about took place in the Czech Republic, in Prague, of all places. Super cool.
Awesome.
And even Claire's boyfriend, shout out to Noah. That's
Noah.
His name. Who's also a missionary kid who grew up in Budapest. And he even got to come. So we had all of our kids here in Czech Republic. It was fantastic.
Wow. That's awesome. And what an ideal spot to get engaged in Prague. That's just...
Not too shabby.
That's right. Not too shabby. Well, okay. Speaking of Prague... I mentioned this in your intro, but the first time you experienced Czech Republic was when you lived in Prague. I did not know this about you, Paul, that you lived in Prague back in 1996. What brought you to Prague? Like, why? Why did you go?
Well, okay, the short, super short answer, it was a two-year work assignment opportunity that came about. I was working for a big accounting firm, worldwide accounting firm, and they had an office in Prague. That's the super boring, short answer. The really cool answer, and actually the more complete answer, is God was answering a prayer that we were praying about Molly staying home as a mom with our brand new baby, the guy that's married now with a wife.
Yeah.
But at that time, he was not married, nor any wife. And so just a three-month-old baby, actually as a one-month-old baby, I heard about the opportunity to work in Prague from... Mm-hmm. another guy I was working with. And 2 months later, we got off of an airplane in Prague with baby, suitcases, a few boxes, a little small dog, and we're seeing Prague for the first time moving here that day.
Wow.
So that's what brought us to Prague. That was, and it was kind of pre-internet. You really couldn't learn much about it.
I
think we bought a travel book.
Yeah, you need to go to the library. Go to the library, look up a book on Czech Republic. Wow. So that was an accounting job that you had for 2 years there. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was kind of an interesting time because this was 7 years after the Velvet Revolution. So there was a lot of transition happening in the country, of course, all in Central Europe and Poland, Slovakia. And so it was an interesting time to be part of a kind of this big shift in the world. And when economies were changing and things that owned by the government were becoming privatized. And so a lot of what we got to do, the projects I got to work on, were super almost once in a lifetime type things like that. Mm-hmm. So that was an interesting but also unique experience to be part of, and to be part of it in this part of the world was amazing.
Right. Yeah. Not only interesting to go as a young family, but just in what was happening in the world at that time in Central Europe and Eastern Europe. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Are there any other memories that you want to share from that time or things that you're like, I can't believe that happened? Or
I mean, it feels like those 2 years, like every day was a unique memory from being homesick the first few weeks and us like both in bed laying in bed with the baby and they're saying, what did we just do?
Yeah, that's a lot of transition, like, becoming parents, moving to a whole new country.
Everything. Yeah, we had a few fun memories. One, our first apartment we rented was probably from a mafia guy.
Oh.
So that was an interesting memory.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Finding ourselves at McDonald's on Thanksgiving the first month was kind of a sad memory.
My gosh, yes. Nothing like a Thanksgiving hamburger.
We actually refused it. We turned around and said, we can't have a Big Mac attack on Thanksgiving Day.
So, oh, no.
So I would say that those some of the memories, I actually worked with this young woman who was at that time in her 20s. And I remember asking her, she was Czech, and I said, what was it like before the revolution?
Oh, yeah.
Communism? I said, what do you remember from it? Because she was, 25, 26. And she said, what I remember about it was everything was just really gray. Mm. Like the buildings were gray. Life was gray. The outlook of everything was gray. It was just gray.
Wow.
And I thought that was a really deep comment about what life had been like in that era of time and how things were transitioning. And in those days, all the buildings were being renovated and being painted and new colors were coming out. And so it was actually like watching this sort of blooming of this place that had this rich history, this amazing architecture, and yet had been this dark gray place coming alive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it was a really beautiful, those are some beautiful memories. But I also remember that there were only a couple of churches. There was no Christian community. It was, that was really strange. And I grew up in the Bible Belt in the Deep South. And so there's a church on every corner.
Right.
And
everyone's in church. Culture. Yeah.
Yeah. So those are some unusual mix of memories from that that time. But but we absolutely fell in love with Prague in this country, Czech Republic. Molly and I both said this, we thought of Prague as the most beautiful city in the world. Every time we left and came back, even today.
Yes.
If I go to Prague, there's like a place in my heart that feels like I'm coming home in some capacity.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Prague is beautiful. And even one of my first impressions when I first went to the Czech Republic, gosh, I think back in 2009 or something, was the buildings. The buildings are now like apartment blocks are like painted in these vibrant yellows and greens and oranges. And it's like, as you say that, I'm like, that's probably why, because they didn't want to be gray anymore. They want to have some color in their life. Yeah.
I think it was part of all that kind of transition that was happening, this desire to go from what had been darkness into this place of beauty, which feels like a great place for JV to be, right?
That's right. That's right. And speaking of JV, so you're like you're from the business world. You're like an accountant. You're a business guy. So how did you even get connected to Josiah Venture?
Yeah, my whole career has just been business and accounting and finance, investments and sitting on boards of directors, all that sort of finance and business
fun stuff. Yeah.
But actually, I had an interesting, the last place I was before I joined JV, I worked for this one individual, and we had a lot of investments we made, and he was a godly man, and he loved supporting missionaries, churches, Christian organizations. And so a lot of what we did was invested money so that he could maximize and give more away.
Wow.
So it was a really good blend of business with ministry in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so I loved that was some of what I got to do, because I got to connect with a lot of the people that we gave to. They would come through our office. But I learned about JV. I met Mel.
And Mel Ellenwood.
And Peter Beaujean. I met those two guys.
Mm-hmm.
Which has probably been 15 years ago now, when they were in Texas visiting some common friends of ours. We learned about this place called Josiah Venture in the Czech Republic, where they were, you know, sharing the gospel, making disciples. And we're like, wait, we lived there. There are no Christians over there.
What are you talking about? Yeah. Yeah.
So Molly and I got super excited about that, just knowing about JV. So that we became friends of the ministry at that time and just started tracking what Josiah Venture was doing over the years. And then introduced JV to our local church and helped kind of organize an English camp back in 2019 from our church to go to Poland and serve at an English camp. And so that became part of our closer connection to just being part of JV.
Okay. Wow. So then you led that camp. And was that the first time you had ever experienced a Josiah Venture camp?
Yeah.
Was that
in
Poland? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that was our first experience of that. It was part of our church youth group. We weren't youth leaders. We just were, we were kind of like, hey, we know JV. Can we come along too and be part of this?
We want to come. So, yeah.
We want to come. But what's interesting is, I think you asked, like, what led me to leave business and kind of be
right,
come over to JV. That same year that we led the English camp, there was an interesting thing that was happening with me. I started, as I was mentioned, I was working with this man who was giving a lot of his net worth out to missions work. And yet I found myself praying about having a calling, which was really strange at this point in my career to ask for a calling, because I was sort of thinking I'm doing what I'm called to do. And yet there was this prayer that I was praying. And it was only like a month later that I was having a FaceTime call with Mel.
Oh.
And he and I would catch up periodically. Every 6 months, we would touch base. And in that phone call, he says, hey, we need a new vice president of finance and operations. How about you? Of course, I couldn't tell him at that moment that I had been praying about a calling for some reason.
Whoa.
I think he would have reached through the FaceTime call and just grabbed me by the shirt and pulled me through the screen. Right?
He would have. Yes.
But that's the beginning of that connecting of this prayer about being called to something different or deeper and joining JV. That's when that conversation started. And then that happened to coincide with our English camp summer. And then we came back to fall conference. That year is when I met you.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So that was fall conference of 2019.
Yeah.
Right?
That was it.
And then when did you join full time? What was the time?
I joined full time in July 2020. So
2020. Just, yeah. Okay. I also joined the international team in July of 2020. So Paul, same.
Wow.
4 years on iTeam, the international team.
Yes. Yes.
That's so cool.
We joined from Texas. We were in Texas. It was still sort of COVID-y back then.
Yeah, little COVID-y. Yes, little COVID-y.
Yeah. So we served there until we moved here in the end of 2021. So about a little over 2 years ago, we've been here now.
Okay, right. So, okay, let's talk about, even for you, I love hearing that of like, you were asking the Lord for a calling and then someone like Mel comes along and is like, hey, we have this need, opportunity. I feel like God does it a lot where it's like he's already stirring something in someone's heart and then someone else presents an opportunity. And then it's like, wow, I can just walk through this door. But for you, like, what was it that you were just like, wow, this is like, yes, I want to do this. And then for you, as someone who worked in the business world, to then have to like switch your mindset to support raising. Always a fun thing for a missionary, right?
Yeah. That's a fun one. Yeah. It's very humbling, regardless of what your background is. It's super humbling. It's a humbling place to go.
Yes.
It's a good humbling, but it is. Our support raising was also during the COVID time. And what was interesting about that is it was an early COVID. So when people just went home right away.
Yeah.
And our times of meeting with people in our home or coffee went to zero because you couldn't leave, essentially. But it went on to Zoom instantly. And mm-hmm. so what we found was people had more availability.
Oh, yeah.
So oddly enough, for us, I think COVID made our support raising easier in some strange way because we had people available and they were like, yes, we're at home. We'd love to talk to somebody. Tell me more.
Tell me more. Tell me what you're doing. Yeah.
So that was our process. But I would say throughout that whole thing, it is a humbling process. And particularly for maybe for somebody who's been in the finance world and you go, well, I sort of could have a plan to figure all this stuff out. Why? I mean, I've done that a lot for companies. Sure. Mm-hmm. And yet what God did in that was use that for me to release that, to let him have all of that. So of course we did our prep work and we read the God Ask and did all those good things.
Yes. Steve Shadrach, God Ask.
So we did our prep work, but what was cool is watching God affirm again and again as somebody would join our support team. And we'd get another donor that would sign up and we'd get the email. And it was, I don't know, Molly and I would just kind of look at each other and go, yeah, it's just amazing. Like it was just this continual affirmation and confirmation that God would put another supporter there, another supporter. And it just, it was a way to allow us to release it and also see him bring together this beautiful fabric of supporters that we could have never put together on our own.
Right, right. Yes. What was people's responses to you as like, you're like, oh, now we're raising support. Like this, the people in your life that you're asking, did you have some interesting responses to that?
We had some interesting responses. I would say that you don't always get the response you think you're going to get. Mm-hmm. From some. And then some people you're thinking, oh, I don't know that person that well. Maybe I shouldn't ask them. And they were some of our biggest fun surprises we would have missed out on that God brought them in. I think what's interesting is someone who's like, Molly and I are both in our 50s. And so, of course, we were talking to a lot of people that are our friends' age and in our age. And some of the responses from some of the men my age were, wow, that sounds like a really cool adventure. Like there was like something about adventure for men that was coming out of that, like this idea of doing something in God's kingdom in this new way. That really was interesting to hear other guys that are kind of my friends or just other people in my peer group to something speak about that desire to not be focused on their own earnings or their own career, but to focus on doing something in that capacity and sort of packing it up and heading to the mission field, create this sense of like, I'd say a really good, holy adventure, I think they were feeling. So that was kind of an interesting thing. So that was kind of an interesting response to have from some of them. But I think we got a lot of people that just were, it felt strange. They would tell us that they were proud of us. And for us, we didn't think that we should be praised that way. We felt like we're just being obedient. Like God's called us.
Yeah.
We're just being obedient. This isn't like some giant leap of faith thing. We're just doing what we feel like God's asking us to do. We're just obeying right now.
That's a great place to be. Just like walking in obedience. But wow.
And sometimes that's all it was. Sometimes it was not the other emotions of like, wow, we're so excited. It was sometimes, some days it was like we're just being obedient. And that's okay those days too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right now in my community group with my church, we're reading the book, The Treasure Principle. by Randy Alcorn. Mm. Have you read that book?
Yeah.
And like, I just love how he talks all about how like everything we have is not ours. It's owned by God. And just that whole perspective of, you know, it's not ours. So we, you know, give things away and have just that like generous mentality. That's how I want to live. Even as a missionary, like I think sometimes it's shocking for people to hear that I also support other missionaries. Like, you know, so it's like, yeah, like I tithe as well. Like it's not like a foreign thing. so it's like not all mine. It's not mine, you know. So
yeah, that's so true. There's sort of that. It's almost like you're the you're a paid professional, Gwen. Why are you doing that? But the principle of generosity is for sure beyond the. I feel like it's so that we've learned so much about being generous over the years that it's not about like the receiver is. It's for sure. It's a blessing to them, but. I think this living from a place of generosity, this abundance, like how else can we bless others? There's just a richness to that. Of course, we know that giving is a spiritual gift. It's one of the one of the gifts. But we're all still called to give. It's not an exclusive just to those with that spiritual gift.
Yes.
So even as a missionary, to be able to still give. Mm-hmm. And
it brings me such joy. Like, I love that verse, God loves a cheerful giver. Like, I love giving to others, and I love when other people, like, especially nationals who are with Josiah Venture, ask me to support them. I'm like, wait, oh, yes, I would love to, you know? And then so I have to remember that when I turn around and ask people for money, like, I'm hoping that it lands on a heart that's, like, joyful. And so you never know. You never know where people's perspective is going to be. But
now that you said this, you may have more people asking you for support after this podcast.
Maybe. you can always ask. But that's good for like to hear like your philosophy of generosity, even like as a believer.
I would say another element to that is trying to live in I almost call it like a posture that's always listening out for others' needs. And sometimes you hear it actually most often, not in somebody asking for something, but actually you're just paying attention. Mm-hmm. So let's say you have a friend who is, I don't know, who's had a lot going on in their lives. They need a time away. They need a spa day, or they need a day away from the kids, or they need something. And they're not really asking you for that help, but you know that you can meet that need by doing something generous for them. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is giving them a gift certificate to something, or it's paying for something, or you're buying a meal that they didn't expect or something. Mm-hmm. But you're paying attention, you're listening to this place of, you're living in this posture of generosity so that you have those opportunities to bless when they're not expecting it. And I think that's the cheerfulness of giving too that comes out. Is because you know that you're meeting a need that wasn't even, it's felt, but they weren't asking for that. And I love living in those places of listening for those opportunities for that.
Yes. Yes. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. Because I think more believers just need to live in that space of, if I see a need, how can I meet it? Or, you know, not just financially, but even like, oh, you hear someone ask for a prayer request and you say like, oh, sure, I'll pray for you. Instead, like, pray for them right then, you know, like, in the moment. But
yeah. Okay, you want a finance pro tip? Can I insert a finance pro tip right here?
Yes.
Okay, in that zone of living with, like, a posture, one of the things Molly and I did years ago was we actually just created our own little, an extra little savings account, if you will, at the bank. And we did a small little savings amount every month for that. Mm-hmm. And we called it our opportunity fund, so that when we heard of somebody that had something, then there was some money already set aside. And we could go, here's $100 towards that thing or something like that.
Yeah.
And so if you want to live in a generous way, if you prepare a little ahead of it, then when you hear that need come out, you're not going, oh, I wish I had had some money to give them. You've already got it ready to go. So there's your pro tip.
Pro tip. Yes. That's amazing. Do you have any other pro tips?
I don't know. That's
a good one. That's a good one. Okay. Well, I would love for you to share just about what you, like, what does your role even mean? Like, what does a VP of finance and operations for a nonprofit organization look like? What does that even mean? And what are the joys and challenges of your role?
I'm still trying to figure it out myself, Gwen. No, I would say...
That's why I'm here. We're here to talk about it. Just like, what do you do?
I would say that... I would say my role in finance and operations is not dissimilar to a role in a for-profit organization. It's a lot of the same stuff. It's a lot of the same... to get really into the business terms, we'll say financial reporting, tax prep, cash flow management systems, all these different things. It's very similar. I would say that's what is unique about my role within ministry is that I'm doing all those same things, but I'm bringing a voice into JV leadership, both at the leadership level, the JV organization, and my role within the international organization. I'm bringing a voice into that leadership, but I'm bringing it from my business strategy perspective. Having not been in vocational ministry ever in my career, I'm bringing all these other ideas, maybe, and not that all of them translate into ministry. So right. I'm learning a ton being in ministry side of things, but that's the uniqueness of what I get to bring. And so when people say, what do you do? Yeah, that's what I do. I'm bringing all the normal business things, but bringing it to a vocational ministry that's has some complexities. We're in, 16 countries over in Europe and then North America and UK. So we have all that, but that's what I get to do. I use this analogy when people ask me about it. So my analogy is, Gwen, are you a Formula One racing fan? I just have to know. Where are you on that scale?
Not really, no.
Okay,
no.
So not really. But you've seen a race car before.
Yes, I have.
Okay, the super cool ones. Okay. So what I explain is I describe JV as this race car that's been developed over the last 30 years. This amazing machine that can go 300 kilometers per hour on tight circuits and twists and turns and unknown hairbends and straightaways. And that's powered by the Holy Spirit. It's God's race car, if you will. But we put in the cockpit, we put in the driver's seat, our missionaries in the field, those leading Fusion, those running English camps. That's our driver of that car. Okay. So they're racing. And so what I get to do in my team in operations and finance, we get to work on the pit crew. The pit crew gets to tune the suspension and make sure the steering is right and the braking systems are working properly. What's the proper fuel mixture? And so when that race car races and that driver crosses the line, so when another kid, another young person in Central Europe gives their heart to Jesus, it's like the checkered flag is coming down. Like we're waving victory, right? And so at the end of a race, what happens to that race car driver wins? He and the crew celebrate together, right? So it is a celebration of the combined effort of what everyone does. So I love getting to play my role in the pit crew because it's all about God's kingdom. It's all about the race team. It's not about our individual little kingdoms within it. So
that's right. That's a really good example. And it's funny because I like to use the theater version of that example. So, there's like actors on the stage and maybe those are like our frontline, our missionaries who are nationals in their home countries, like, woohoo, they're on the stage, but then no one's going to see them if someone's not operating the lights or turn their microphone on, or the people who are handing their props, like their training materials here, And so that's why I tell people about even the international team of like, we're just helping keep the lights on.
That's true.
But I love it. I love that example. Formula One. I do theater. So,
Hey, I get it.
You get it.
I think they both make sense.
They
make
do. Sense. I remember you told me, and maybe this is something you read, or I don't know. Maybe you came up with it. We'll just say you came up with it. But like the whole picture of when Billy Graham was doing all of his crusades and speaking all these places, like not everyone can be Billy Graham, but like Billy Graham had to have someone who was there setting up the microphone.
That's true. No, I've said that. That is one of my examples. Is you don't go stadium to stadium by yourself. You don't drive the van and plug in your microphone.
Yeah,
and do everything that's happened. So like it takes a team of people that are on ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And we would say those people are part of ministry too, not just Billy. So
exactly,
praise God for Billy and praise God for his microphone.
Exactly.
Guy.
And I love how we call our supporters, they're actually our ministry partners. And I recently had an event to tell people about Josiah Venture and kind of share even what I do. Like I could easily go get a job at some company and do social media managing for some other company, but that's not what I'm called to do. So even like as you're talking about your calling of taking your gifts and talents that the Lord's given you with finances. And then for me, like social media communications, like we could easily do it other places, but we have this calling on our lives to pour into God's kingdom. And not to say you can obviously do that in the business world. And that's why I tell people too, like you're on mission no matter where you're at. But I think that God also just provides unique opportunities for his people. And like you talked about, just to like walk in obedience in that of like, just to be open of like, oh, you want me to raise support now? Okay.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Here we go.
No, I think that's so true. I think I look at how we're gifted, and what I would say even to like if somebody was considering where are they in their, like say they're in their early 20s, mid 20s, like age of my kids even, would be to lean into that gifting that they have, because there's a lot of capacity in, say, let's say particularly in the US for business people. Mm-hmm. There's lots of people who fill lots of jobs. And so since I'm bringing this is finance podcast.
Yes.
I would say that, people that fill a finance role in the States, there's a lot of people to line up for those roles. There's not a lot of people to line up for roles in missions.
Exactly.
Using that same skill set.
Exactly.
And they're needed too. They're needed badly. So we need those race car drivers to sit in the seat, and we need pit crew people too.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And so leaning into that gifting, looking for ways to utilize the skills that how God's made you is so valuable. Mm-hmm. And so badly needed. Mm-hmm. In our ministry roles, in our ministry capacities, there's a need that's not fully fulfilled yet.
Right. Wowzers. I love talking about this kind of stuff, especially, and I'd love to also thank like just the people listening who might support a JV missionary. Thank you for partnering up with us in ministry. And also a question I had for you, as I have you, the VP of Finance and Operations on the line, on the podcast, like how healthy is Josiah Venture overall in our finances? That sometimes even I get that as a question of like, well, sometimes mission organizations, like who knows how they're spending their money, you know? So could you talk about that just a little bit here?
Yeah. Then? It's a great thing for even our missionary team to be equipped with that, but also for the public, anybody who would want to know about JV, to understand a little bit about that too. So one of the things that there are a few ways that measure our strength of financial health. So the immediate answer is we're super healthy and super financially strong. So
yay.
That's the
yeah.
And here's why I say that. We have some external, there's external watchdog groups that evaluate and look at us. And so ECFA is one. And so they just actually audited us last year and gave us like their top, you know, review. And so we're certified by them, which is a great seal of approval.
Yeah.
But But we operate much lower cost than many, many nonprofit organizations. Mm-hmm. And so we operate at a very low level of expense, which is another thing that we try to minimize our costs. But the thing that I look at and that the board of directors looks at, that we look at together three times a year, is I really look at kind of mainly three big factors. There's a bunch of them, but the three big ones I would share with you is one of the strongest ways to evaluate a nonprofit is how much do they have set aside to cover their operations. If they lost their revenue or they lost their income, could they still operate? So you look at that ratio of that to your reserves. That gives you an indicator of strength. Mm-hmm. Ours is very, very strong. So it is one of the things, it's one of the first things I look at, one of the first things I share every time the board meets, I share that data point with them. Mm. So I almost call it, we call it like my smiley face factor. There's a big smiley face on that one. So that's a good one that we have. The second thing is we have zero debt. So a lot of organizations incur debt for their buildings, their land. And as we have many projects going on with JV right now, from Ukraine to Albania to Slovakia to Czech Republic, we have a lot of different capital projects. And none of those are being financed with any debt. So we go forward as we raise the funds. We have amazing supporters and ministry partners that have come along to be part of that support. And so as that happens, we move forward on those projects. So there's no debt. That's a huge, huge financial strength. And the other I look at is the staff, our staff and our staff balances. So with, 350 missionaries, you have a lot of staff balances, both first and second culture, that continues to grow. And so even through COVID, even through the war, staff balances actually continue to grow. Donors continue and supporters continue to support our missionaries. And so that's an amazing affirmation about what they're doing, what we're doing. So those three factors are things that are the quick looks at financial strength and right now we're really poised really well in those three.
I love to hear that. That's amazing. That's cool. And we also just put out our 2023 ministry report. And there's always a financial section in that report. And that's always cool to see some of those numbers on how we're doing financially, which is really cool.
Yeah, and we have a lot of diverse supporters. Our donor base is really broad. And so that is another big strength that we aren't relying upon just a few people, but lots and lots of people make this happen.
Right. Yeah. And that's what I tell people too, when they ask they're like, you have to raise your own support. Like you're not a salary. And I'm like, no, but I have now my own pool, my own network, my own of ministry partners. And then think about, 350 missionaries with Josiah Venture who each have their own network of people. Like that's amazing to think about the number of people that are supporting Josiah Venture from that perspective. So
it's phenomenal. Yeah, it really is.
I love it. Well, Paul, we're coming to the end of our time together and it's just sad.
But it's gone so fast.
It's gone so fast.
We didn't talk that much about all these other cool things, but we talked about a lot
There's
of cool
so
things.
So many cool things. But the question I ask everyone who's on the podcast, no matter what their role is within Josiah Venture, is what advice would you give to young people today? Because we love young people and you're the father of a young person. So what advice would you give to young people today?
Yeah, I think back to, when I think about this question, I think about what comes to mind is visiting Fall Conference 2019. And when our eyes were wide open and we were still asking the question, God, are you calling us to be part of this? And so my advice goes beyond just missionary, but it's more like, what is your calling? What's God calling you to in this season of your life? Now, it may be a missionary on a foreign field. It could be in your local coffee shop as a barista. Who knows what your calling is. But your calling is something that I do think we throw that word around a lot in church and ministry circles, calling, and God's called me to this. But I actually feel like we're not overselling it when we really think about what's the heart of that. And the reason I say that is, At the end of that fall conference, we were saying our goodbyes to people, all these amazing JV people we had just met, like 100 new best friends, probably, as we walked out of the tent.
That's right.
we were headed back to the train to head back to Texas, and we saw Connie Patty, mm-hmm. and say goodbye to Connie. And Connie stopped Molly and me, and she said, "I don't know if God's calling you to be part of this. We would love it if you were part of it, but we don't know if God's calling you. That's only something that you can hear, and you have to hear that from the Lord yourself.
Mm.
And if you don't hear that voice, you don't hear that calling from the Lord yourself, then if you were to make this move and join something on your own desires or your own interests, then when things get really hard, it's easy to walk away."
Mm.
And mm-hmm. and she says, and things will get hard. Because life is hard. Life is, whether you are a barista or you're in the foreign field, life gets hard sometimes. And she said, so unless you have that calling, your tendency could be to quit. So you have to hear the Lord's voice in that. And because if you hear his voice and you know he's called you, then that's the thing that keeps you going and strengthens you even in those hard times.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that Molly and I have reflected on that one conversation with Connie maybe more than any other conversation we've had in the last 5 years. And for sure, there's been hard things. We have kids in Texas. We miss them every day. It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
But we rest confidently in the Lord's calling. And so that would be my advice to young people, that pursue the Lord, pursue what the Lord is calling for you. And what he's calling you right now may not be what he's calling you for the rest of your life. It might be for this next season of life.
Mm-hmm.
But when you understand, but leaning into that calling will give you the staying power to continue when things get hard.
Wow. That's good. I had to take a minute.
Take a minute, Gwen.
I had to take a knee. Take a minute. thank you for sharing that, Paul. And just, I love hearing more of your story and more of your perspective. Is there anything else I like to ask? Is there anything else that we didn't talk about that you want to make sure that you share?
We're grateful to be part of what God's doing in this work. Having an opportunity to serve in God's kingdom in this unique way is a real blessing. And so thank you for inviting me on.
It's fun to
bring the fun world of finance to the JV podcast. And we love being part of that. We love what you're doing, Gwen. Thanks so much for what you do.
Thank you very much.
Awesome at it.
I love it. And that's the thing. Like if you're operating in your calling, then hopefully you're enjoying what you're doing.
I'm so
glad that God created you the way you are, just with your business mind, your strategy, your creative side coming forth, like all those things. And so thank you for how you serve our Josiah Venture team, Josiah Venture family.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's a blessing to do so.
Yes. All right. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Josiah Venture Stories. For more information about who we are and our vision and mission, visit us at josiahventure.com and follow us on social media. If you have any questions about this episode or would like to get in touch with our guest, please email social@josiahventure.com. To help more people hear about this podcast, please leave us an honest written review or share this episode on your social media. Thank you, friends, and have a blessed day.